Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Wednesday, week one of the NFL season. So the season gets underway tomorrow night. The Steelers open up the season at Cleveland. Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern, CBS game. Why do I bring this up? Because there is still no sign of Le'Veon Bell. You know Le'Veon Bell, the dude who put up nearly 2,000 yards in 15 games last season, still has not been spotted. There is your fantasy alert. First one of week one. There was a team meeting this morning at 9 a.m. Some expected Le'Veon to attend, but he didn't. Center Marquise Pouncey had previously told ESPN, quote, "He'll be here Wednesday. Count on it," end quote. Well, if you were counting on it, you might want to stop. I mean, there is still time left. It's 9:04 Pacific, noontime Eastern, but so far no Bell. And to me, the most amazing thing about the story is that it's not a bigger story. You've got a star player, an absolute game changer, one of the best in the NFL, not happy with his contract, has not shown up to camp, yet nobody there really is freaking out. And I think that tells you everything you need to know about the Pittsburgh Steelers. Imagine this. Imagine what would be happening with any other team if the star player did not show for training camp and was not there the week before the season opener. Can you imagine, for instance, any other team in the NFL handling this like that? John Gruden is an example. Couldn't wait to run off his best defensive player when he wanted more money. The Steelers, though, don't even blink when Bell is not happy with his deal and doesn't come in. I mean, take like the Seahawks. How would they be reacting if there was no Russell Wilson? Would the Saints fans be chilling if Alvin Kamara was nowhere to be found right now? What would the mood be like in New England if Tom Brady had not shown up at this point? Bill Belichick would be grinding his teeth to sawdust. Hell, people were freaking out months ago when there was talk that maybe, just maybe, Rob Gronkowski was reportedly, possibly, maybe potentially thinking about retiring. I mean, we remember the reaction. Yet here you have Le'Veon Bell, who's not with the team 96 hours before kickoff, and everybody in Pittsburgh is like just going about their business. Nobody's freaking out, or if they are, they're not showing it. Maybe it's because they love James Conner. Maybe it's because they still have Antonio Brown and Big Ben. Or maybe it's because they're the Pittsburgh Steelers and they're professionals, and they know exactly how this goes. Take Mike Tomlin. He was asked yesterday if he expects Bell to report today. He didn't sound that concerned.
I hadn't thought about it.
Like who? Le'Veon. I haven't thought about it. This is, of course, why we named our horse Straight Fire. Because Mike Tomlin promised nothing but straight fire when he got on Twitter. Straight fire, like, I haven't thought about it. Yeah, that guy. Yeah, I really haven't thought about that. Really haven't spent much time thinking about whether or not our all-pro running back will come to work tomorrow. Hadn't really thought very much about one of the best players I've ever seen, much less had, is coming in tomorrow. Yeah, I haven't thought about that. The funny thing about that is, like, it may sound like I'm mocking him or clowning him, but I'm not. I actually kind of believe him. Because then he went on to say this.
When he gets here, that's when we'll start quantifying all Le'Veon Bell-related things, his overall readiness, the amount of time that we have between his arrival and our next competition, et cetera, et cetera. We'll weigh all of those things at the appropriate time. Right now, we're just singularly focused on the guys that are here and working and have been here and working and kind of building a plan around variables that we know. That's the appropriate thing.
How about that? So, Steeler fan, have you thought about it? Because apparently Mike Tomlin has not thought about it. I mean, listen to this guy. Does that sound like a guy or an organization that's tripping? I mean, even the slightest. They've got Super Bowl aspirations. Their window is not going to stay open much longer. And one of their biggest weapons is not out there. And the head coach is talking about quantifying all the Le'Veon Bell-related things. And quote, the amount of time we have between his arrival and the next competition. I mean, that's locked in. That's laser focused. That's a guy who's not that concerned. From the outside, there is no sense of panic at all in the Steelers. Once again, maybe they're used to it. Maybe they've done this and gone this way with Le'Veon Bell. Maybe they're the Steelers. But I got to say, I do respect it. I respect the way they're handling it, you know, like pros, like adults. And they also know this. They know that Bell has only played two of the last five season openers. They know that. They also know he's only gone for over 100 yards in one of them. They know he's not an early September back. He's a rest of the season back. And they know that the most likely thing is he'll show up later today or later this week. He'll take his physical. He'll sign his deal. He might even play on Sunday. And if he doesn't play on Sunday, he'll play next week, and they'll just keep rolling along. In other words, they're not tripping, so don't expect me to be tripping. They're not freaking out, so you shouldn't be either.
I hadn't thought about it.
You know what? I hadn't thought about it either. I really hadn't thought about it either. We talked a lot about Khalil Mack. We talked a lot about Aaron Donald. Le'Veon Bell? Nah. I hadn't thought about it.
I hadn't thought about it.
Straight fire, Mike. I know you haven't thought about it. I actually believe him. Normally when a coach says, I haven't thought about my best player not being here, or one of my best players not being here, I don't believe him. Mike Tomlin, I tend to believe him. Steeler fan, do you? Are you freaking out? You shouldn't be. Tyron Woodley is my guest. Tyron, great to have you on. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. I got to ask you, it's Wednesday of fight week, so you're a couple of days from stepping into the cage against Darren Till in Dallas, as I mentioned. How's your week going? How are you feeling right now?
Week's going great, man. Week's doing well. Mentally, I feel really sharp, and I'm just excited to get out there Saturday and once again defend my title.
All right, so looking at the lead-up, Till has been running his mouth, talking a lot of junk in lead-up to the fight. He says the belt is mine, that he knows he's going to take that belt. I mean, you've seen the type of thing before. When you see this coming from him, what's your reaction?
I'm not to say anything. I don't base my emotions or game plan or change anything based upon what my opponent says. You know, we have to do on Saturday. We got to get in there. We got to, you know, action. Got to speak. Words can't speak anymore. So I don't listen to it. I don't watch it. You know, I purposely don't get updated on anything anybody says because at the end of the day, I am what I am. He is what he is. We can't change that this week. And we got to go out there and we got to fight against our opposing opponent.
Tyron Woodley, the UFC welterweight champ, is going to defend that belt. UFC 228 coming up this weekend. You know, I know you've also been asked quite a bit about the fact that he's a bigger guy. His team is going on about how you can't replicate his size or a style in camp. What's your reaction when you hear that? Is there anything to that?
You know, I can't replicate his size. It sounds very ignorant. You're telling me I can't bring in somebody that's just height and size? He's the only human being that's height and size?
Right.
That's silly. It doesn't even make sense to say. And furthermore, my last 3, 4, 5 fights, I've been training with middleweights anyway. My training partners are middleweights. Some of them are light heavyweights. So size has never been an issue for me. I've never been the tallest fighter in the welterweight division. Everybody's always taller than me. His reach is only a half inch longer than mine. And to be honest, his fight style reminds me of a lot of students of Duke Rufus. So to see that training style and his ability, it reminds me of guys like Eric Koch and, you know, some of the other fighters at Rufus Sports. So that's 100% all wrong. You know, it's actually the opposite. I can replicate the size. I can't put somebody in front of me that's actually better than him. You know, I've had strikers that I train with since camp that actually do what he does better, sharper, more precise and faster and, you know, more craftier than he is. So I'm overly prepared, ready to get it on.
Tyron Woodley joins us. That championship fight's coming up this weekend, UFC 228. You know, not only do you have the belt, but you've already defended the belt. And as you said, quote, I fought my bleeping life for this belt. I put everything into getting this belt. He want to come and get it. Everybody thinks they want something until they're locked in that octagon. He's going to see. End of quote. I really like that because every champion I've had on this show has talked about how nobody knows what it's like to be in a UFC title fight until they're actually in a UFC title fight. How different is it when there's a belt on the line and the octagon door closes?
No, I'm not talking about a title fight. I'm talking about being in there with me. A lot of people watch me on film. A lot of people think they have the sauce and they get in there. And they get in there and I put hands on them and I touch them and I hit them hard. I'm there. I'm going in a moment, and it's a lot harder to defend than what they saw on television not the mental pressure, not the anxiety, not those things that they thought they had figured out. Coach, you lied to him. Your coach told you your size is going to play a factor. He lied to you. He told you that I was slowing down. He lied to you. He told you that if I back up, do this, that, and the other, and you'll be successful. He lied to you. So everything you've been told the whole training camp, you built your whole confidence and your whole game plan off of this. You get in there, you recognize they were all lies. Now what are you going to do? He's not equipped to change the game plan on the fly. I am. If I'm doing the technique or a move and it's not working, now I can go to grinding. If that's not working, I can go to wrestling. If that's not working, I can go to striking. If that's not working, I can go to counter. If that's not working, I can say F it, and I can just go to straight fighting. That's the difference between me and him.
Bombas has totally re-engineered socks with comfort innovations that add up to a way more comfortable pair of socks. 2 years of R&D led to multiple improvements of the sock design, performance, and comfort. And an arch support system that provides extra support where you need it most, and it feels like a hug around your foot. And stay-up technology, 133 tension levels were tested to find the perfect tension that's comfortable, stays in place while not being too loose, and never leaves a mark. Plus, super soft cotton that you will never want to take off. Best pair of socks ever, bar none. And one pair sold equals one pair donated. I would never tell you to do something that I don't do myself. Bombas are the socks that I wear every single day. I'm wearing them right now, and they are extremely comfortable. And right now, you get 20% off your first order if you go to bombas.com/Rome. That's BOMBAS.com. You'll get 20% off your first order. Bombas.com/Rome. Codename Rome. Best pair of socks ever. Tyron Woodley's the champ. All right, so there's a lot of buzz around this guy, too. A lot of buzz around Till. And as you pointed out, it almost feels like there's this move to make him a big deal so they can take a card back to England and make him a headline. I mean, what's your reaction to that, and what do you make of that buzz and this creation around him?
I've been known to squash the buzz. I've been known to intercept the hype. I've been known to change the narrative. So why should I change now?
Let me lay this out, too. You have been known to do that. For instance, Dana White may have had some other plans. For example, you beat Robbie Lawler. For example, you beat Stephen Thompson, who isn't just a good fighter, but as you've said, he's got those blue eyes and the All-American good looks. Do you get a little extra motivation from knowing you can ruin plans like that and continue to be the world champion?
Yeah, I got extra motivation mainly because this kid is confident. He believes he can beat me. And he actually believes he has what it takes. He thinks his belt is his. And some people say he really believes it. That belief in self is very dangerous. I speak about it all the time. But that belief in self is not enough. The fact that he's not scared is not enough. The fact that he thinks his size is going to play a factor is not enough. His left hand is not enough. You know what I mean? You got to have more to be the person that's willing to die in there. And the narrative is going to be changed once again. The hype was behind Kevin Gastelum. If he beats me, he's going to fight for the title and hopes to get the Mexico market. He went to go coach off on the fighter show after losing to me. The hype was behind Robbie, as you stated earlier. He was maybe going to fight GSP or Conor in New York. That had to get intercepted. You know what I mean? Wonderboy Thompson. You know, the way he was sported at that time was through the strikers with the blue blonde hair and spinning and wild and crazy attacks. That had to be, now, what's going to change now?
We're talking to Tyron.
Connor talking, Connor sounding, UK arena selling out, shit talking kid, that's going to change as well. So I'm going to go out there and you know, I'm going to put it on him. I'm going to walk away. I ain't going to do too much talking after this.
This fight's coming up this weekend, championship fight. Tyron, one thing, you go back to before that Lawler fight in 2016, and I've heard you talk about a conversation you had with Anthony Pettis about what it felt like the first time Dana put the belt on him. What do you remember about that conversation, and then what did it feel like when you finally got that belt yourself?
You know, it's funny, when you asked me, I remember the exact time, you know, my videographer, he's sitting right here, I was looking at him. And it was in between training round. I was sparring. I randomly saw. I said, "Hey, come here." And I remember being on one side of the cage. I looked through the cage, and I said, "Come here real quick." I said, "Man, what did it feel like when you put that belt around you?" He said, "Man, I felt like I was an effing man." I said, "All right, I always wanted to know what it felt like." And he went right back to training. When I got the belt, to be honest, it didn't feel like I thought it would. It was still, quote unquote, it. It didn't feel like that. I thought I was going to jump and scream. Now, I jumped and screamed, yeah, but obviously it was a crazy knockout. But it didn't feel, I thought I was going to be jumping, yelling, screaming, hallelujah, doing splits, jumping on the cage. But you know what? I've won it so many times. In my mind, in the training, in the times where I could have got off the treadmill, I could have eased up, or I could have did one less round, or I could have not did the extra sprint. And when I was feeling like, you know, I wanted to take the day off and I found a way to push through, I mentally won the world title hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times before then. So when I actually really won it, it was just a rewind and play. I'd already won it. I'd already did the championship work in my life. I already lived like a champion before then. So when he put it around my waist, I was joyed that the day had finally came, that the moment had finally came. But it wasn't, oh, my God, I can't believe it. I did believe it, and that's why I won.
Man, that's so strong. I mean, the reason it wasn't, it didn't feel like the first time was it wasn't the first time. You'd had that belt put on so many times. I got to ask, you know, with that kind of focus, you're a Fox Sports analyst. You work with TMZ. You're an actor. You're a businessman. There are lots of different things that could distract you. How do you make sure you maintain your focus on being a champion and paying the price that it takes to be a champion?
You know, you can always build your brand outside of the octagon to make yourself a stronger brand within the octagon. But if you ever lose sight of what your primary focus is, what your real job is, that's when it becomes a distraction. There's many, many movies that I could have done that I didn't do because I was training camp. You know, music, television, all these different things that when the fight is locked in, you don't think I want to go to the studio? I want to go to the studio bad. That's my outlet. That's my way to release and express myself. I didn't do it. I feel like it was unprofessional. It was taken away from, you know, my focus, which is training. Even if I had time to, I didn't do it. Because this is what I do. And I think the difference between me and other athletes that had, you know, careers in entertainment as well, I think they start making that their focus. And they didn't make the fighting field their focus. If you would have saw me in training camp and how focused I was and how regimented I was, how disciplined I was, and how much, you know, it's not about how much work you put in. It's about the output. If you see the output that I got each workout, how I got progressively better each workout, how we made the game plan, and how the execution was just laid out in every workout, you wouldn't even ask the question on whether or not they're focused or not. And, you know, that's a blessing that I've had to basically, you know, being able to do that. You know, yeah, it's things that, you know, I got a lot of great projects going on, but those things got to wait until I defend my throne. I got to make sure the throne's okay first.
Check the calendar. It is already September. This year is flying by, and Christmas card season at the Rome House is almost here. The Christmas card season means one thing for us, stamps.com. Stamps.com. So what you need to do is create your own Stamps.com account. You can do so in minutes online with no equipment to lease and no long-term commitments. Click, print, mail, and you are done. Stamps.com brings all the amazing services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your fingertips. Once again, I have used Stamps.com for a long time because it is so fast, it is so easy, it is so convenient, and it does save me money. Right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer, which includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale. All you have to do is go to stamps.com, hit the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in jungle. Once again, I love this service. I know you will too. Go to stamps.com and enter jungle. This story requires a little bit of a setup. Because if I say Fortnite on this show, I'm guessing maybe half of you know exactly what I'm talking about, and half of you have no idea. The half that has no idea is either over the age of 35 or over the age of 35 without teenage kids. Because Fortnite is like the cultural phenomenon of the past 12 months. Everybody plays the game. Everybody. From David Price to Norm MacDonald to Drake to Lil Yachty. Everybody plays the game, and everybody who does play that game agrees on the same thing. It's addicting as hell. I speak from experience. I do not play the game, but it's in my house. And I've seen my kid trip when I rip the game from him. Now, one of the aspects of the game that makes it so addicting is the live streaming component. Players can broadcast their sessions for the entire world to see. So if you've got a headset and a mic, all the viewers can hear your dialogue as well. You're broadcasting. Welcome to 2018, everybody. We not only play video games, we watch other people play video games. We broadcast playing video games. And it goes on for hours on end. Hours and hours, all night long. Which brings me to the story at hand. The Padres and outfielder Will Myers. All-around great dude. Really good dude. Never been in trouble. You can pretty much pencil this guy in for 25 bombs. Knock in 80 runs every single year. The definition of low key, low maintenance. But even the lowest of the low key and the chillest of the chill can make mistakes. And Myers made a big mistake on a live mic, a hot mic a week ago. The thing is, the live mic was not in the clubhouse. The hot mic was not wired to him in the field. It was hanging from his dome during a live stream of, you guessed it, Fortnite. He was playing with a Padres teammate when he casually dropped this nuke on his manager, Andy Green, for the entire world to hear.
The Padres are doing cutoff and relays tomorrow.
At 3 o'clock
in September, dude. Oh my god, bro. It's so miserable, man. It's insane. Andy cannot be any worse than he is right now.
Dude.
Hey, I got a mini for you, Grubby. What'd you say, Carl?
Streaming.
He's streaming.
Well, that was Grubby, but I'm just saying.
I don't know what's been said. I haven't really missed.
It's absolutely incredible. It's amazing. That's a major leaguer on a live stream saying, quote, the Padres are doing cutoff and relays tomorrow at 3 o'clock. In September, dude. Oh, my God, bro. It's so miserable, man. It's insane. Andy cannot be any worse than he is right now, end of quote. And then you hear Will's guy say, dude, I'm streaming this. As in, dude, you just lit your manager on fire on the internet, live. And you gotta love that part at the very end where Myers says, I don't know what's been said.
I don't know what's been said. I haven't really missed.
You don't know what's been said. You don't know what you said yourself 10 seconds ago about your manager? What do you mean you don't know what's been said? You just said it. No sooner than you said it, your guy said, hey, bro, I'm live streaming right now. Well, I don't know what's been said. What you said 1 second ago is what's been said. How could he be, and how he couldn't be any worse than he is right now? I know what's been said, Will. The internet knows what's been said, Will. And believe me, your manager, Andy Green, definitely knows what's been said, Will. It worked its way back to him. In case you're still not sure what's been said, this is what's been said.
The Padres are doing cutoff and relays tomorrow at 3 o'clock in September, dude. Oh my god, bro. It's so miserable, man. It's insane. Andy cannot be any worse than he is right now.
Oh my god, bro. It's miserable. Andy could not be any worse than he is right now. All right, so a few things on this. Number one, how the hell does my man not know he's live? Either his boy didn't tell him. And that's a terrible thing not to tell someone, right? You got to know we're live. Or Myers knew and he forgot. He got comfortable or he got into the game and he forgot. But that's a terrible thing to forget, right? You're a major leaguer and you're just running off about the manager. And again, we all learn this. I learned this. They learned this. Don't you have to assume that every single mic is hot? Every single mic is live? Isn't that the first thing you learn? And don't assume that every single Fortnite game is streaming live. Also, Andy Green running drills in September is far from the first time a manager of a bad team has put his team to work. I mean, we've all seen George Knox get loose in Angels in the outfield, right?
I want you, here in uniform at 9 tomorrow. We're going back to work on fundamentals.
Fundamentals? In the middle of the season?
I thought the game started at 1.
It does start at 1, and you're a jackass.
No, I'm a pitcher.
Oh, my God, bro. Danny Glover, it's miserable. Now, to Will Myers' credit, he owned it. And he apologized to his manager, and the apology was really, really good, actually. Quote, I can't say those types of things even if it's in private. Obviously, I'm terribly sorry about it. You can't complain about drills, especially when you're trying to get better. End quote. Great apology. Great apology. Not only should I not say that on a live stream, man, I shouldn't even say that in private. And when we're playing as poorly as we are right now, you can't complain about anything. So that's a good apology. It's a good apology and an even better acceptance of the apology from his manager. Quote, there was on my end an understanding. I've done the same to my boss at some point in my life. It just wasn't 2018 where everything's recorded or streamed live. End quote. So Andy Green handled that really well. Dude gets called the worst on a Fortnite live stream. And he responds with understanding and empathy and saying, come on, we all have bosses. I've had bosses. We've all done that, except 2018 is different, where there are hot mics and live streams. So Andy Green, class act, great leader. I'm a fan. Now, I can't say that I would have the same reaction if Hawk or Alvin were streaming Mario Kart on 64 and talking bleep about me. In fact, they were. Hey, boneheads, don't you know I know everything? Don't you know that all mics are hot? Don't you know that even I know what you idiots think before you think it? Or what you morons say before you say it? Don't you know that I know when you're cracking back on me and I have record of it?
Jim is making me do the week that was in a 4-day week. Dude, nice. I mean, Jim could not be any worse than he is right now, man. Dude, I'm streaming this. I don't know what's been said.
Morons. Hey, Alvin, since apparently you're hard of hearing and you don't know what's been said, listen up, kid. I heard that. Starting now, I want a weekend that was. You got me. A weekend that was. I don't know how you're going to do it, but that's not my problem. I don't know how you're going to do it because we're not on the air on weekends. But on Monday, you better be ready with a weekend that was. How's that grab you, kid? Back to fundamentals, son. The weekend that was, and I want that thing starting next Monday. So, to Will Myers, Alvin DeLauro, and all the others live streaming, you gamers that are live streaming, remember, everybody is watching, everybody is listening, even your boss. And if you can't play a video game without talking junk about your boss, maybe you don't play. Shout out, I'm on to you, Alvin. Shout out to the 2018 San Diego Padres. It's not too late to get right, or at least writer. Like my man Bill Ryder coming in here on Monday. Nice job, Bill. It's not too late to get right. Make sure that your most memorable moment of the year does not happen during a Fortnite session. Because so far, unfortunately, it probably has.
I don't know what's been said.
You don't know what's been said. You were just crying about having to do a week that was during a 4-day work week, like this week. You think that sucks? How about the weekend that was, Alvy? That starts on Monday.
Dude, yes. Thank you, man. I have another. Thank you. Thank you, Jim. I was hoping you'd bring that up. In fact, I was going to bring it up if you weren't going to bring it up. What else can I do for you? Oh, I'm sorry, bro.
Thank you!
The wife's been all over my ass. I'm sorry, man.
Alvin apparently had himself a legendary weekend. He had his fantasy draft. Alvin was up and down the coast working his fantasy draft. He was talking junk online too. I saw it. Fantasy alert. Alvin's ready to let it rip. The Wednesday edition of the Daily Jungle is brought to you by Stabil. There's no time in emergencies to make sure your equipment is ready, so make sure you trust your machines to Stabil. Hurricane season is underway across most of the country, bringing extreme wind and rain with little to no warning. It is critical, then, to make sure your generators, power washers, chainsaws, John boats, and other emergency equipment are ready to use when you need them most. Whether you live in a high-impact area or not, planning in advance is a critical step in hurricane preparedness. Stabil, America's number one fuel stabilizer and ethanol treatment, making sure your equipment starts when you need it the most. We are joined by the manager, Dave Roberts. Dave, good morning. What's going on? How are you?
Romy, how you doing, man? I'm doing outstanding.
Good to talk to you, Skip. You're always doing outstanding. All right, so as I mentioned, you're in a pretty good spot right now. You're a half game out. You fell behind 2-0 in the second inning last night, then 4-0 in the third, but you battle back. You end up winning 11-4. The game, Dave, could have gone south in a hurry. What do you make of how Rich Hill was able to turn things around and then the bats arrived?
You know what? That is what happened, Romy, is that Rich turned it around. He left a couple of hanging sliders that they hit out of the ballpark, but sometimes with Rich, with some pitcher, it takes him a little bit to get into the groove. And those last two innings that he threw, his curveball, he was striking it. It had the shape that it needed to. The velocity was good, and he kept us in the ball game. But for our offense last night to answer back, that was a big one. You know, we lost at DeGrom the night before in a good game, and for us to bounce back and now have a chance to win the series, it was a lot of fun. Dodger Stadium was a good place to be last night, Romy.
Dodgers manager Dave Roberts joining us. You know, Dave, I got to ask you about Rich Hill because he's an endless source of fascination for me. I've got so much respect for this guy. I mean, as many people know, he has been through so much on the field, even more off the field.
Sure.
I've got to know, what's it like to manage him and to work with him?
So, Romy, it's funny you say that because just 2 days ago, I was in the dugout joking with him before a start day, and all the players, you know, he's sort of like the Chase Utley father figure in some sense, but he's a lot more, and I say this very nicely, a much more immature than Chase, and they're virtually the same age.
Right.
But guys gravitate towards him. So it's funny because you got these 20-somethings that gravitate towards him, and he's funny, and he looks like a CPA when he's not pitching. But then, so I encourage him to grow out the facial hair so he can act a little bit more, look a little bit more intimidating. So he's done that, and his wife enjoys it, which is great. But his start day, Romy, he like sees red, and it's kind of Clayton Kershaw-esque where you can't talk to him. He's psycho, and we call him like Crazy Rich when he's pitching. And but this guy is a savage when he's on the mound, but guys love him and respect him, yeah.
Dave Roberts joining us. I'm glad I asked you about that. You know, you mentioned that things were great at Dodger Stadium last night. What about the team? You've won 9 out of 11. You're doing it at the best time of the year. What's the vibe like around your clubhouse and around the team?
It's a great vibe, and let me go back to this past weekend where Tommy Lasorda came in after the Matt Kemp homer to win it for us, said that he's had so many great moments at Dodger Stadium. He goes, that's one of the highlight moments that he's ever had and the loudest he's ever heard, or one of the loudest he's ever heard, Dodger Stadium. So that was special, and it just carried over into this series. You know, the vibe is great. We got a lot of good players. We're focused on each game, and I like our club, Romy, and I said that from the very beginning.
Dave, you mentioned Tommy Lasorda. Hey, listen, I grew up in Los Angeles, Dave, and I was a giant, giant Dodger fan as a kid growing up. In fact, I hate to give it up, but I'm doing my 50th episode of the Jim Rohn podcast next week, Dave, and lo and behold, the guy who's coming in is the Penguin, Ron Say. Ron Say was my idol growing up, so I know
wow.
All about Tommy. In fact, Dave, I saw Tommy not long ago. We have the same clothier, and I see him, and he looks me up and down. I hadn't seen him in a couple of years, Dave. He literally starts F-bombing me. Tommy does, and I mean that in the best possible way, but you know Tommy. What's it like when Tommy comes around and you guys talk baseball?
Okay, so believe me, I know exactly what you're saying because when we lose a couple games in a row, right now Tommy's on this little motor thing that takes him around and he drives around the clubhouse, and he's not afraid to drop some F-bombs in my direction, and I actually try to deter him refocus him to the coaches and the players to give him the motivational speeches that he gives. And actually, when he was in there 2 days ago, we pulled up the Kurt Bavakwa. So your listeners, all the guys, you know, you got to pull up that Kurt Bavakwa, Tommy Lasorda. And I said, Tommy, man, I can't do that anymore. I couldn't get away with that if I pulled that with what you pulled. And he goes, why not? You got to be passionate. And I go, but Tommy, I hear you. But anyway, Romy, he's great, and congratulations on your 50th podcast. That's awesome.
Thanks, Skip. I appreciate that. I know exactly what you're saying, too, about Tommy. Like, hey, Tommy, I can't do that. And he's like, why not? Why not? Why can't you do that?
Why not?
Just do it. Just do it. Okay, Tommy, you're right. You know, you mentioned Matt Kemp, Dave. Dave Roberts, my guest. You mentioned Matt Kemp. And Kemp's an amazing story because he had put on a lot of weight in the offseason. Some estimates had him close to 50 pounds heavier, but you yourself called your shot early in spring training. You felt like he was going to do something special. What did you see that gave you that thought?
You know what? So one thing is that you look at his baseball card, that's one thing. And I know Matt from San Diego when I coached him. And I know the person. I know the care and the professionalism. So I think if you kind of put that all in a bucket, I bet on that. And he's an all-star this year for us. He came into camp in outstanding shape. And from day one, all he's told me is, I'll do whatever you ask. I just want to be on a championship team with the Dodgers. So his role has been relegated in recent weeks. And it's not easy for him. He doesn't like it. And I don't expect him to like it. But when he is called upon and prepared, he prepares to play every single day, Romy. And he does his stuff on the defensive side every single day. He's talking to the young players in the clubhouse and saying a lot of good things, preparing the right way. So those are things, Romy, that I bet on. And for me as a manager, to see it kind of come to fruition and to see him get big hits and guys kind of gravitate towards him and charge him when he wins a game for us with two of the biggest hits we've had all year, it's really satisfying for me just to see it from that side.
We're talking to Dodgers manager Dave Roberts. You know, I could go down the roster and talk about each player because there are so many fascinating stories. But like Justin Turner, he comes off the DL at the beginning of August. He hits over 400, six home runs, 20 runs batted in 25 games. I mean, I guess you really shouldn't be surprised when you see that kind of productivity from him. But to come off the DL and do it in August, what do you make of what you saw from him?
Romy, you said it, man. We could be on this phone, on this call right now for an hour talking about our roster. There's so many different dynamics and so many great stories within our ball club. But you bring up Justin Turner, and he's the leader of our ball club. And so coming out of spring training, getting hurt, hit on the wrist and on the hand, and to be a part of hitters' meetings, to be in the dugout, talking about playing the game the right way, calling guys out, holding them accountable, coming back and performing, getting hurt again with the adductor, still doing the same thing, and then coming back 100% healthy and being the offensive spark that he has been, and the big hits, the at-bat quality. And, Romy, you see it. Whether it's the homer, the double, take the walk to pass the baton, making a great play like he did the other night to save a run to keep us in the baseball game. Those are things that JT does that really don't always even show up in the box score.
Listen, you're never going to make it about you, but I want to make it about you for a minute because you're in your third year with the team. And, you know, in that position, the expectations are always going to be through the roof with the Dodgers, and it's a long season. But it seems like every year there are chances for people to freak out, fall apart, panic. But, Dave, you always keep things so steady. How do you go about maintaining that perspective and that calm approach when it's a lot easier to panic?
I think that I always try to make it about the players. And I think that the managers or the coaches that I respected the most throughout my playing days were the ones that could kind of be consistent with their demeanor, good and bad. I do, you know, as you see me on a nightly basis, I love to celebrate the good things because when things are tough in baseball, and baseball's a tough game, so I think for me to be able to celebrate and celebrate the players, I think that's a good thing. But, you know, this day and age with the media, and I think that's great because it's more awareness to our game and sports in general, but there's a lot more opinions, and I think that I've got to be more even, and managers got to be more aware of being eliminating the noise, because the players, the coaches, the players' wives and their parents, they're all in tune with a certain narrative. But I think for me, as my job is to keep things moving forward and consistent and try to win baseball games. So I think for me to be up and down is going to do no one in any service.
Dave Roberts joining us for a few more moments. So you've got your next series coming up against the Rockies in Denver. And I bring that up, Dave, because that's where Kenley Jansen sustained an irregular heartbeat last month, and where he also had an episode back in 2012. He had an appointment with his cardiologist yesterday. Can you share the latest? What's going on with him now?
Yeah, Romy, he did have the appointment, and so we haven't made a final decision yet, and so Kenley is really wanting to, and it's not necessarily in Kenley's hands, because obviously we want to defer to the doctor. We haven't made a final decision. I know Kenley wants to be with his teammates, but as an organization, we really have to kind of default to what's best, obviously, for his health. So, obviously, my tone is a certain direction right now, but we haven't made that final decision yet.
You know, I get that. With respect to that, let me just ask you, kind of as you deal with this, as a manager, how different is it to deal with a player who has an irregular heartbeat as compared to a player who's dealing with an arm or a leg injury?
You know what? It's honestly, for me, I know it's not one and the same, but for me, when you're talking about health, and obviously one is much more extreme than the other, but I think for me, as a manager, I put it in the same bucket in the sense of, if you're not right, we're going to get right, and we have extra players that are going to step up and pick you up. So whether it's an arm, a leg, an ankle, JT, go on the DL, we're going to have somebody else pick you up. Kenley, if it's your heart, you deal with that, you take care of that, we're going to have somebody else pick you up, because that's what we're about. So again, I'm not trying to diminish what Kenley's going through, because obviously when you're talking about the heart, it's much more serious. But the player's health is always, in my opinion, first and foremost.
The 2016 NL Manager of the Year. LA is a half game out of first in the NL West. They're at home today against the Mets. It's a 4:35 p.m. Pacific start. Dave Roberts, their manager. Dave, couldn't appreciate you anymore. Thank you so much. Always good to have you on the show, Dave. And I appreciate that relationship so much.
Hey, I appreciate you and the Jungle Karma, man. This is huge for us. Thank you, man.
You got it, Dave. Thank you very much. You got the karma. You know that. You more than anybody else. But back in the day, for those of you who do not know what Dave Roberts was talking about, it was the legendary meltdown over Kurt Bevacqua.
Tell you what I think about it. I think that is very, very bad for that man to make an accusation like that. That is terrible. I have never, ever, since I've managed, ever told a pitcher to throw at anybody, nor will I ever. And if I ever did, I certainly wouldn't make him throw at a 130 hitter like Lefay or Bevacqua, who could hit water if he fell out of a boat. And I guarantee you this, when I pitched, and I was going to pitch against a team that had guys on it like Bevacqua, I sent a limousine to get the to make sure he was in the motherfucking lineup, because I kicked that his ass any day in a week. He's a motherfucking big mouth, I'll tell you that.
When the Mariners were the best story in all of baseball, not in their division, not in the American League, I mean the best story in all of baseball, the team with the longest playoff drought in all of professional sports, zero American League pennants, 42 seasons without a world championship. And they're out there playing their asses off and going toe-to-toe with the defending world champs in the AL West. Yeah, those dudes. Well, those dudes, the only ass they're kicking right now is their own ass. Because we're at the part of the season, the part of the schedule where the Mariners are fighting one another and then going out and getting housed by the worst team in baseball. Baltimore 5, Seattle 3. And if you're wondering how the M season is going right now, a team that's gassing out right before our very eyes in the wildcard race had enough in the tank to throw hands behind closed doors, but not enough to beat a team that's on pace to lose 114 games. That's how their season's going. News of the brawl started to break yesterday afternoon on Twitter. According to one local reporter, quote, D. Gordon asked reporters to step out of the clubhouse and all hell broke loose shortly after, end quote. I mean, I guess he had the presence of mind to clear the clubhouse out before he gave somebody the hands. The Seattle Times had maybe the best blow-by-blow of the proceedings from there, and I quote, after asking the media to leave, Gordon basically remained in the same spot. A few minutes later, there was the sound of yelling, bodies moving, and commotion. The once closed doors to the clubhouse crashed open, showing an altercation between two players and about six players, including Cameron Maben, Mike Zunino, and Nick Vincent, trying to break it up.
Robinson Cano and others could be seen coming over to help defuse the situation. The actual participants couldn't be seen in the mass of bodies, and the doors were shut again, but Gordon could be heard screaming obscenities. End quote. So six dudes versus two. Obscenities being screamed, a mass of bodies. Was that a players-only meeting in the Mariners clubhouse or the upper deck at a Raiders game? Of course, M's skipper, Scott Service, tried his best to make the whole thing seem like it was no big deal at all. Quote, things happen in the clubhouse when you're talking about 25 guys, and in this case, now 35, of the most competitive guys you're ever going to be around, and they spend what seems like every waking moment together, end quote. I mean, the ultimate manager thing to say. The 25 most competitive guys ever who spend 6 months together and more time here than they do with their own families, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, fine, Scott. Fine, Skip. I understand stuff like that does happen in every major league clubhouse, probably every major league season, but you don't go out and chuck knucks with your boys and then lay down against the worst team in baseball history if you're so competitive. If you're the 25 most competitive guys ever, you don't give each other the hands and then lay down against the worst team ever. You don't have an all-out melee that spills right into the media's lap, claim that it's just your guys caring way too much and being way too competitive, and then get put on your back against Baltimore. You don't blow an 11.5 game lead in the wild card standings, get the guys together for one last no holds barred battle royale, and then turn Alex Cobb into Moose Messina. Now, to be fair, I'd already counted out the M's. I'd already counted them for dead. The Yankees are still the Yankees. The A's won't quit. And while I guess 5.5 games with 23 to play is not technically dead, when you're spilling out of the clubhouse and into the hallways to get after the guys wearing the same cap and sleeves as you, and then you get knocked the hell out by the O's, you may as well just stay down. Stay down, pretend you're dead, take the 10 count, and come back swinging next spring. I know one thing. You don't want to make the argument that we just care too much, we're just so competitive, and then get knocked out by a team that's going to lose 114. But then again, that's life for a Mariners fan, right? Get a taste of the life, get a taste of how the other side lives, and then puke it all up all over your own shoes. A hell of a season just got tossed on the grill right next to those grasshoppers that you're paying $4 a plate for. But hey, it was fun while it lasted, right? Better than it usually is. And now they're giving each other the hands and still puking all over themselves. The Mariners doing the Mariners things. We are joined by Chase Elliott. Chase, great to have you on the show. Good morning. How are you?
Good, man. How are you?
Good, good. So you're coming off a fifth place finish at the Southern 500. It was your sixth straight top 10. How pleased were you with that performance? And how do you feel about the way the team is running right now with the playoffs approaching?
Yeah, no, it's been a decent last really month, I guess, or so. I felt like we got to Loudoun a month or so ago, and seems like we've been a little better, I think, than we were, you know, throughout the season leading up to that point. So that's been encouraging. Nice to be able to grab a win and lock in to the playoffs and have a shot to go for a championship. So looking forward to these next 10, 11 weeks.
All right, so what about that? You've got the win, which I'll get to in a minute, but Sunday's race in Indianapolis is the final regular season race before the playoffs. So in that sense, is it just another race, or with the playoffs about to start, do you approach it a little bit differently?
Yeah, I don't really think we approach it any differently. I think the good news is for us, and which is different from what I've been in the past couple of years, we've always gone into that cutoff race and been right on the line or had a good opportunity to either get in or miss it as well. So I just nice to be able to go to these last three or four races and know that we're locked in and not have to worry and play that battle of, play the game of being right there on the cut line. So I've certainly enjoyed that. I think we can be a little more aggressive because of that. But it's still important to get race wins and the benefits that that you achieve by doing so. They help you so much in the playoffs that, you know, you have to be aggressive and you can't really sit back and cruise into it.
Chase Elliott joining us here in the jungle. Now, I had your teammate Jimmy Johnson on the show last week, and we talked about your win at Watkins Glen last month. I want to hit that for a moment, but you had a wheel hop in turn one of that final lap. So what was going through your head when that happened?
Yeah, no, that is not what you're looking for. I came to the white flag, and I had a decent gap on the 78 and just thought, hey, idiot, don't mess up this lap and you'll be fine. And went off into turn one and had some wheel hop issues and luckily was able to gather it back up. But the one thing I was like, just don't mess up. And the first thing I did was messed up. It was definitely not what I was hoping for. Way more eventful than I was shooting for, but we'll take it. It worked out.
Good on you. It did work out. Chase Elliott, my guest. You also ran out of gas, and then Jimmy came along, and he gave you a push. What was that moment like for you?
It was incredible, man. Jimmy has become such a great friend of mine, and he's an incredible teammate, but I feel like our friendship has grown stronger over the past year or so, and he's certainly lended advice and just been super nice through some of my tougher days at the racetrack, and a guy in his position certainly does not have to be like that. So I've just been appreciative of that, and awful lot to be learned from a guy like him who, you know, obviously has had a ton of on-track success, but, you know, I feel like the way that he approaches his life off the track is really just as impressive, and I think anybody can tell you that. So it's been great to grow that friendship, and that was a great moment.
Chase Elliott joining us. Chase, you had come so close so many times. I mean, going to that race, you had 8 runner-up finishes. You know, it's all a process. It's all a journey. I understand that. What was it like to have that many near wins, and then how good did it feel to finally break on through the way you did?
Yeah, no, that's definitely, certainly a big factor in it. And it's like I told somebody the other day, you know, obviously I would have loved to have won before August of this year, but, you know, at the same time, I can tell you that if we had won a race in my rookie year, I wouldn't have appreciated as much as I did, you know, being in year 3 and having those tough days. It makes you appreciate the good ones more. It's just satisfying and just a lot of reassurance, I think, to everybody involved on our team that, hey, you know, when we're at our best and we have things going and we have things go our way, we can compete with these guys. And I think ultimately that was the biggest thing. And you always have that confidence and you believe in that along the way. But just to have the result to show it certainly doesn't get any better than that. So just been it was a great weekend. That's the only bad thing about our sport is the weeks go by quick and the next race comes up fast and you have to move on.
Chase Elliott joins us. You know, it doesn't get any better than that, except for maybe if you've got your family there to celebrate it with you, especially if your father, Bill, is the legend of the sport that he is. What did that mean to be able to share that moment with him?
Yeah, it was awesome. I wish my mom had been there, too. Unfortunately, she was at home, you know, but to have Dad there, he was actually spotting for me in one of the corners. So he played a little bit of a role in the win, which I thought was cool. And just to have him there, you know, he's been there through, you know, those rougher days and he's kind of lived it alongside with me, him and my mom. So been just nice to have him there and be able to, you know, share that moment was pretty special.
Yeah, what about the other side of that? I mean, if I go back to that, he was running at Road America last month and you served as his spotter. What was it like to see him back in the car and how was it serving as his spotter?
Yeah, well, I actually ended up not spotting. That was the original plan.
Okay.
I ended up just kind of going and watching. But still, you know, man, he just wanted to go have some fun, and he still enjoys racing. He does some other types of racing as well. And those guys asked if he wanted to drive that car, and I think he just wanted to go enjoy it and have a good time. And I think ultimately, you know, mission success. I think he had a great weekend, a lot of fun, and kind of got to see, you know, how the cars drive now, which I thought was neat, and to kind of hear his feedback. And we enjoyed it, man. He's watched me do a lot of racing over the past 6-7 years. And before that, it was me watching him do a lot of races. So it was just cool to kind of bring back some old memories of that and kind of get the shoe back on the other foot again.
Got another moment or so with Chase Elliott before he goes. Chase, I think a lot of people know you're a huge Georgia football fan, and you've been referencing a line from Kirby Smart, quote, pressure is privilege. Pressure is privilege. What does that mean to you, and then how do you approach racing as a result?
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, that's something that can really apply in any sport or any pressure-filled situation. You know, if you're in a situation that has pressure on you or is making you work a little harder, that means there's something to be benefited from on the other side that you care about and that matters. And if you're in those spots, you're doing something right to get there in the first place. So I think just recognizing that, knowing that, you know, you know, for me, I guess the way it translated was, you know, running second 8 times, you know, you don't do that by, it's not all luck at that point, I don't feel like. So I think just recognizing that, you know, hey, if we're in those positions again and we have opportunities to go and close out a race or whatever it is, just to embrace the moment and make the most of it and realize that it's there for a reason.
Chase, one last thing. This is really key, I think. Really critical point. I want to touch on something you and Dale Jr. hit on recently. Dale Jr. tweeted, "Can a driver wear his own throwback gear?" I always get weird wearing stuff with my own image or name on it, but it gets murky when it's a 20-year-old throwback. Opinions, please, end quote. And you responded with, "Absolutely not." Lay that out for me. How come?
Man, I just cannot hop on the bandwagon of wearing my own stuff. I just think that is really weird. I don't know. I mean, I guess if you're okay with it and you think it's fine, whatever, that's your call. But for me, I've just always been, that's just one of my things. Everybody's got their things they don't like, and I just can't get into wearing my own stuff. So, yeah, I don't know. I just, that's not me. So, hey, whatever floats your boat.
Good night now!